Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, a shouty match erupts at a Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting during an off-topic debate regarding Milwaukee's ballot shortage. Plus, the state Republican Party launches a new code of conduct and post-election analysis after their recent statewide defeat. And all eyes are now on 2026 as the race for governor and state Supreme Court heats up. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 18th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we begin this week, or today, excuse me, this morning, with some breaking news that came out from the state Supreme Court, a very highly anticipated ruling related to Governor Tony Evers' partial veto powers that expanded school funding increases for the next 4 years. Well, liberals on the court ruled 4-3 that declared Evers' partial budget veto was constitutional, which this does mark a defeat for Republicans who argued against the move. Now, this decision has been, once I said, very highly anticipated by GOP lawmakers who have been waiting for this decision, and it comes right at the great time for them as they begin to craft the next state budget. Hearing some reaction already that we received so far, of course, the governor is praising this decision. In a statement this morning, he's saying, you know, all along, I have these expansive veto powers. I issued what I did, and he stood by it all along. So this has actually happened almost over 2 years ago in the 2023 and 2025 state budget. Meanwhile, you're hearing people from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss calling the court a partisan decision and saying now that the court is a rubber stamp for all of liberals' decisions.
So there are two things here. One is the big picture of what's happening legally, which is the court, in a series of decisions over the last really 40, 50 years, has expanded the governor's powers, allowed it to kind of push the envelope, unless voters have reined it in through constitutional amendments, right? The Frankenstein veto was one that was reined in like 15 years ago. You can't stitch together two different parts of sentences, create a new sentence. But governors have the power to strike out numbers for a long time. The court is saying what he did essentially struck out numbers. They're not letters. These are numbers, not letters. And so what happened was there is per pupil funding, which is a cap. What you can spend between property tax dollars and state aid. There was a provision in the budget 2 years ago that sought to increase that cap for $325 per kid per year over the two-year period, 2023-24, 2024-25. Evers struck out numbers and dashes and convinced it to be 24-25, four centuries from now. The court ruled that was okay. So there's that big picture legal thing. Governors have expansive authority. They reinforce that authority. We had one batch of decisions a few years ago from a then conservative majority reining in the governor's veto powers. But for the most part, the courts have upheld what the governors have done. Then there's the budget picture, which is Republicans have told us for weeks and months that, hey, we want this actually be struck down. If they uphold it, it reshapes the budget process because now they're going to be worried, okay, what do we do with the budget?
Because to make sure it doesn't happen again.
That's right.
Right.
So anything that spends money, the governor can use partial veto authority. The governor, they're worried, will go hog wild with this thing and find all kinds of ways to be creative with numbers. So one, can they reach some kind of agreement with Evers that would avoid that worry? Two, can they craft the language itself? And this is what every lawmaker does, the leadership, every budget. They go through the fine-tooth comb and look for anything they can find where a governor could use that to try and do a partial veto. They missed this one 2 years ago. So that's going to happen now. What's with the budget? They told us they want the decision before they do anything with the budget. Now they have it, but will it alter their thinking about what they can do with this budget and what governor could possibly do in the back end?
Right, and an agreement between GOP leaders and Governor Evers, well, we haven't seen that in a very long time. They have this trust issue between each other, which has been kind of a rusty relationship for many, many years. So that's what I think is the big question ahead. On the other hand, we haven't really heard from educators yet. Of course, this decision just came down shortly before 10 a.m., but I looked back at stories that I did when this first veto happened back in 2023, and there were some educators that were frustrated with this because they called it unrealistic. They didn't think it was actually going to be a reality. So this really just reignites the whole debate on schools having to deal with funding issues. How are they going to afford this cap and increasing it each year? It's going to be a big debate this summer for sure when they craft the next state budget.
There's a caveat here. One, every biennium is a new chance to change that per pupil limit. So in theory, Republican lawmakers and governors could change the law for 2025-27, have a different increase per pupil spending. Someday, Evers won't be governor anymore. When that's going to be, we'll not know. There'll be other governors, other legislatures. This is not going to be 400 years guaranteed of increases. The law will change. I will bet you before I retire, the law will change. And two, these aren't guaranteed property tax increases. Remember, it's a cap between you spend between state aid and property taxes. So this is going to be what happened, the impact we contingent upon how much state aid is put into the formula in this upcoming budget. If you don't put enough in to offset the property tax increase, then that cap is going to come into play for what you pay every December on your bills. Then it becomes an argument of who's to blame, right? Evers would say, if there's no deal, nothing changes, Evers would say, look, those guys, Republicans, won't fund education. Your taxes are going up because they won't meet the need of these schools. Republicans would say, this guy vetoed this thing for 400 years. Every property tax dollar is his fault. This will be a messaging game if we get to that point sometime after the budget's done.
Should be an interesting budget season, that's for sure. All right, let's move on to another story this week, which was a routinely in-person Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting turned very sour and very contentious at one point when the Democratic Chair Ann Jacobs and Republican Commissioner Bob Spindell got into a shouting match. And how this was all triggered is when it was talked about a ongoing investigation into Madison's uncounted, which is about nearly 200 absentee ballots, and that discussion was going on. Bob Spindell was talking about that, but then while he was talking about the Madison investigation, he said his bigger concern was how Milwaukee, the city, had about 9 polling locations that ran out of ballots during the April election. The big caveat and how this came so contentious is that issue in Milwaukee was not on the agenda, which prompted Ann Jacobs to start screaming at Bob Spindell and telling him that he is out of order. She also threatened to eject him. Things eventually calmed down. Spindell didn't leave the meeting, but I spoke to both of them afterwards to get a little bit more clarity on what Spindell was asking for, which he later said is he wants a full investigation into the Milwaukee Elections Commission. So let's take a listen from both of them.
The Milwaukee Election Commission had a chance to investigate this. I talked to the Doug Hague, who was one of the election commissioners there. It appears to me they're not doing anything. And the election administrator says, well, it's a new day. What does that mean? I mean, the Election Commission has worked very well during my 18 years, and I do not like to see this commission have lack of transparency, have lack of ballots, lack of customer service. It's something that needs to be investigated by the Wisconsin Election Commission. And Ann today said, well, it's not on the agenda. Well, I publicly call for her to put this on the agenda for our next meeting.
If people want to file complaints, that is the mechanism by which this commission investigates things. If Commissioner Spindell wants something investigated, he needs to communicate with the chair and ask that it be placed on the agenda, and it has to have a reason for it. I want to see some explanation of what it is that the investigation is supposed to uncover that we don't know right now.
So I want to go back to Monday, too, because the Milwaukee Elections Commission did also meet. They talked about what went wrong and why polling locations ran out of ballots. They said they printed more, and it was more of an issue of getting those ballots to those locations. Now, whether there's an investigation, I have high doubts because of what you just heard from the chairwoman, Ann Jacobs. Really just call out Spindell for having somewhat of conspiracy theories, because Bob Spindell's concerns are not just that Milwaukee ran out of absentee ballots. He said he was also at Central Count. On election day, he saw that there was some rooms that had frosted windows over them. There was rooms also with black curtains. You know, I talked to officials. I wasn't there on the grounds, but this is routine things that were also in place during the November election. They're not counting ballots or, you know, storing ballots behind these rooms. It's more for staffs to take breaks, et cetera. Also, just to kind of update people on the Madison investigation, of course, it was earlier this week that the Madison clerk did resign amid this ongoing investigation into also what went wrong there and why nearly 200 absentee ballots went unaccounted for. But what we also want to talk about, JR, is that we've been covering WEC for many, many years now. Of course, you have for much longer when they first were established in 2016. And it's not unusual, I guess, to see some of these outbursts and some Republicans and Democrats kind of get at it when it comes to certain issues that's discussed.
It's more Spindell and Jacobs tend to mix it up at these things. So you have to have like the backstory of they usually have been meeting virtually and have since COVID. So they kind of continue that. So you don't really have this person-to-person exchange. They're in person, and poor Don Millis is stuck between the two of them as they're yelling back and forth during the hearing. So there's a history there. Bob is not afraid to push the conservative viewpoint. In fact, if you listen to him at meetings, he will tell you that I am here to represent Republicans. That's what he's after. He is going to push their viewpoint, their concerns, bring them to the commission. Others find it grating, and he have mixed it up before. And you got that display on this week, which kind of covers up the other thing, which Ann Jacobs and Don Millis have conducted depositions now of the former Madison clerk and others in her office. It prompted them to ask for more depositions, and they're saying they like what they're hearing in terms of like best practices going forward. So that was the positive news out of this whole circus that we saw on Thursday.
Right, and I think the main difference, too, is when they are virtual, they have the power to mute people. Yeah. So that was what also why this kind of spilled out in the open. All right, let's move on to another election-related story, focusing on the Republican Party of Wisconsin after they passed new bylaws and essentially launched a post-election analysis to kind of discover what worked and what went wrong after they had another statewide defeat in the April 1st election. So let's first start with the bylaws. This is basically a new process to remove county party officials and members from state executive committees if they harass or publicly defame state party officials or state lawmakers. Now, these changes come as some local GOP chairs have been at odds with state party chairman Brian Schimming after a series of election defeats. It was also this week that the state party launched a post-election commission that will review things like messaging, field operations, minority outreach, election integrity, data, spending, and advertising.
So let's go back a little bit. We've been in a state convention for Republicans in which there was a resolution to demand Robin Voss, the Speaker, resign from his office. Okay, there's that. We've seen, for example, the Sheboygan County GOP last fall refused to stock Amy Binsfeld's yard signs at the county office because of positions she had taken. We've seen this like butting of heads between some grassroots activists, some county parties, and the state party for a while. This is an attempt to rein that in because with Amy Binsfeld, she lost by less than three percentage points. Would that have helped the GOP, the county party, helping her? Maybe. Was that the difference of 800-some votes? Maybe not. But it doesn't help you in a top 5 to 6 race in the assembly when you're being undercut by your own local county officials, right? Robin Voss has been the subject of all kinds of vitriol from the base for a while. Is that helping the GOP cause? The state party's kind of had enough. And also, Ken Soraka, who is the Caddo County chair, just got elected the 8th Congressional District chairmanship. That actually he starts that term after the state convention in May up in Wausau. He had an arrest in 2018 and conviction in 2019 for a domestic abuse incident. He felt he's being targeted, not about that necessarily, but other things, being speaking up essentially. This is going to make state convention a hoot in May because you have a situation where a lot of county parties in Wisconsin for Republicans have been taken over by quote-unquote patriot groups. And if you talk to Republican lawmakers, especially longtime ones, they'll tell you that back in 2011, like after Act 10 and these big fights on right to work, they'd go back to their county parties and be like conquering heroes. They'd be lauded for what they had done. Post 2020, with these patriot groups now kind of like taking over these county parties, they are beaten up because they didn't rescind the 2020 election results. They're not Trump enough. They aren't being pure enough on Donald Trump's issues. It is a symbol of the change in the party base from what it was 10, 15 years ago to what it is now. And lots of people are agitating against these kind of longtime Republicans you get these conflicts. There's that. The review of 2025, the spring election, like, you know, I've seen Republicans do this before. Other parties have done it before. They're trying to figure out an answer. Well, the answer is pretty obvious. It's not a mystery. There was a poll from the conservative Institute for Forming Government this week, talked about abortion was a big issue. Donald Trump's a big issue. Elon Musk a big issue. We talked about this show before. The spring election has changed in Wisconsin. You now have a plus five start for Democrats, roughly, I mean, just kind of rough number, every spring. And then you add some fuel to fire, like a Elon Musk, you get a 10-point loss. So for Republicans, they want to talk about strategy. I mean, there's a key point here. The memo from Republicans about this review talks about third-party strategy. We've talked before. Mm-hmm. Republicans like to have all these groups doing stuff. They don't want to funnel the money through the party, then the candidate for more effective ad buys. Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce, they do their own ad buys. Dick Uihlein, his group does its own ad buys. It's not as effective spending money that way. But they're in a position where the base has changed. The base has turned out as Trump's on the ballot. I don't know how that's going to change with a postmortem. From my conversation with people, they know they have a problem. But they have a big race coming from 2026. Rebecca Bradley says she's going to run for election. They have to win that seat to keep alive the hope of flipping the court back in 2028. They need something. They need an answer. And this is their attempt to find an answer to that dynamic that has changed on them in spring elections.
And what's interesting, too, even despite President Donald Trump winning again this year, there has still been party infighting, which really all began with the efforts to oust Speaker Voss at that convention, which was 2-3 years ago now, which was pretty vocal. I mean, he got booed on stage. The recall effort really kind of ignited right there. And that's also when Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, talked about Michael Gableman. And, you know, we know that whole investigation didn't really go anywhere.
Remember, Voss gave Schimming a vote of confidence just yesterday.
Yes,
saying,
yeah, I did ask him about
this
that.
Is not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, in November, all we were told was how great the Republican ground game was in Wisconsin. That delivered Wisconsin for Donald Trump. Did they forget how turnout voters between November and April? No. The electorate changed. The motivation changed. And again, Trump voters have shown they only turn out when Trump is on the ballot. That is a thing that I'm not sure how the postmortem addresses that issue and fixes that issue for Republicans, because Trump, we don't think, can run again. So if he's not going to run again, how do you get those voters out?
Right. It's almost about a waiting game teams as well. All right. Let's move now on to the state Democratic Party, because they, at their state convention in June over Father's Day weekend, will be electing a new chair, of course, after the news last week that Ben Wickler will be stepping down from the chairman post. Of course, there's been a lot of names thrown out there. We just kind of want to recap our viewers of where we're at, who's running, who's in, who's out. These four individuals that you see on your screen have formally launched a bid. We got William Garcia. He's the La Crosse County Democratic Party chair. Brian Kennedy, Glendale Mayor, Devin Remaker, he's the former state party executive director, and Joe Zepecki, he is a Democratic strategist. So the field is widening just after a week after Wickler's announcement.
So here's the reality of this race. It is all about who has the most connections with the base of the base. The people come to the convention, we've been to conventions, mm-hmm. they are the core of the party. I mean, like, you're talking hard. People want to give up a nice summer or spring weekend to sit inside and listen to speeches all weekend long, all right? They're not your average Democrat. So who has the best connection to those people who are going to show up, who has a relationship with them?
And who can raise some money.
So let's talk about that in a second. Devin Remaker, former executive director, he's worked with these folks before. That probably gives him an in a little bit. So Pecky's an operative. He's done some stuff. Probably gives him an advantage. But don't discount what Kennedy has done or Garcia and how they've built up relationships. We learned from the Ben Wickler run for national chair, right? He had Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, all backing him. And he lost. And not by a close margin either in the first ballot, right? It tells you that if Tony Evers or Tammy Baldwin endorses in this race, it'd be good for somebody. But it's who has those relationships with the base of the base. Then to the money piece, on the one hand, Republicans were overjoyed last week that Wickler is gone. They're like, thank God he's gone. We don't have to worry about him anymore.
Yeah.
But once you get a donor in the door, it's easier to get them to keep giving. So for whoever succeeds Wickler, and others might step forward, you never know, can they keep the money machine rolling by making the case of, we're still Wisconsin, we're still purpley purple, and we're still going to matter in every U.S. Senate and governor's race and presidential race going forward? Can you keep Steven Spielberg giving to Wisconsin? Here's the reality about Ben Wickler, who has been a phenomenal fundraiser. I mean, like, the best we've ever seen. Somebody told me a long time ago, if he were the chair of the Idaho Democratic Party, nobody knew who he was. It was a perfect storm of what Wisconsin is, Wicker's connections, and having Governor Evers in the East Wing, because if you're a party chair and have the governor's office, he's going to raise money.
All right. Now let's look a quick glimpse at the governor's race, also on the ballot in 2026, as there's a lot of Republicans eyeing that as well. You got Bill Brenner for the Whitefish Bay businessman, Josh Schumann, he's from Washington County Executive, Senator Patrick Teston, Senator Mary Falskowski, and Congressman Tom Tiffany. So the field is widening. I mean, these are all names that we're hearing about, JR, which could make for a very interesting contest.
So the peg this week is Berrien announced a PAC that is going to fight for conservative values and help Republicans get elected. It's basically a campaign in waiting. He's working with Betsy Ankeny, who ran Ron Johnson's 2016 campaign in Wisconsin, worked on a super PAC for his campaign in sports campaign in 2022. Dylan Loeffler worked on Ron Johnson's 22 race and Donald Trump's 24 race. BJ Martina, longtime pollster. These are people who are a campaign in waiting for Bill Berrien if he pulls the trigger. What's going to be fascinating is, I spoke about the power of Trump on the ballot. The power of Trump in a GOP primary is immense. So of those candidates, who can get the Trump endorsement, who can then turn that into an electoral victory next November? Because a primary is way different than a November election. All right. So you would argue Tom Tiffany, maybe the Trumpiest of the Congress members from Wisconsin, he'd have an in. But what's the environment going to be like next fall? I can't take this spring and apply it to next November. Mm-mm. But there are some signs Republicans of, if people are that unhappy about Trump right now, where are they going to be post-tariff fight and everything else next fall? That's what you got to consider if you're thinking about running for governor as Republican next year.
Also, still haven't heard from Governor Tony Evers yet whether he's going to seek re-election. All right, we also just want to do a quick follow-up on the state Supreme Court race as well, who's in, who's out, who's still thinking. Right now, the one Democrat, Dane County Judge Chris Taylor, she's still thinking about it, supposed to have a decision within a few weeks, could be a few days, remains to be seen. One person that did tell you, JR, who is out, that's Pedro Colon. He is a Milwaukee County judge. And, of course, when you first broke last week, current Justice Rebecca Bradley, conservative, of course, did say she is seeking re-election, but we don't know what might happen if Trump might tap her as well for a federal appointment.
When Chris puts out a statement saying, "I'm heartened by the encouragement I've received," probably tells you where she's going to end up and making a decision about running for state Supreme Court next year.
And she was also considering it 2 years ago as well before Susan Crawford got in. All right, let's just talk about some fundraising here. Another favorite topic of yours, Dare, as you dive through the numbers. But it is important, right? I mean, this is the third congressional district. We have some new contenders in the race, at least on the Democratic side. As you see there on your screen, Emily Byrd, she is the Eau Claire County City Council President, She entered the race on April 15th. Rebecca Cook, we've known all along that she is going again to go up against, Congressman Derek Van Orden. And just looking at the fundraising numbers so far, Van Orden raised about $1.1 million since March of 2025. A big chunk of that was from Elon Musk as well. Rebecca Cook, of course, raised $1 million within 3 weeks of announcing her rematch announcement. Well, that depends now that we have a primary, of course, if she makes it through. And then just wanted to note, of course, Burge entering the race as well.
So Burge's test is going to be, how do you catch up the fundraising of Cook, right? There are plenty of Democrats you talk to who aren't big fans of Rebecca Cook going for a third time. Remember, she lost the primary in 2022, lost the general in 2024. Third time isn't always a charm running for office, so there's that. But she raised $1 million in 3 weeks, Van Orden $1.1 million in 3 months. That's nothing to sneeze at. So something to keep in mind. And also, Van Orden is on like every list of like top targets for Democrats. They're going to go after him next fall if things continue as they are right now.
All right, let's get to a non, 2026 topic, which is just looking at the NFL draft that, of course, Wisconsin is hosting. Green Bay is next week. It will kick off on Thursday. And in lieu of this happening, Green Bay area lawmakers proposed a budget bill that would essentially just fund public safety efforts. Now, Governor Tony Evers, just to state, he did put in his state budget $1 million for Green Bay. The main difference between this new one, it would target municipalities outside of Green Bay as well to help cover some of the public safety costs. As you can see, the breakdown, this bill is a little bit more expensive, $1.25 million for this effort. And I talked to some local officials who were obviously very grateful for this. They do have hope that this could get through, and it would cover things like overtime costs, right? And a lot of these towns, too, are much smaller. So some individuals that I spoke to said, you know, we just don't want to be super strained, and we want to have the ability to be able to pay these officers, because we still need officers, of course, not covering the draft. So let's just take a listen to some individuals that I spoke to this week about this.
We're hoping that the state will recognize the investment that we're having right here and the impact that that investment will have throughout the state, and hoping that they will help shore up some of the costs towards the public safety side of it.
It just is a tremendous help for our village, for my residents, that they don't have to carry all of that burden. You just can't be too safe. And we want everybody to realize that they will be safe when they come here.
So we'll see where this effort goes. Of course, they wouldn't get the money right away. If it was approved in the state budget, they would then be allowed to ask for reimbursements to get some of that funding back. Another thing, just talking about the budget, that we want to mention is that we know that Governor Tony Evers and GOP leaders did meet to talk about a tax plan, but it seems like nothing really came out of it, JR.
So we both spoke to Robin Voss in December. He said he wants a tax cut before the budget. Devin Lemahue said, I want a tax cut before the budget. We even conditioned the Capitol that every April 15th of an odd-numbered year, there's going to be a news conference, Republicans saying, here's our tax cut plan. So when that came to pass, I saw a news conference, I go, well, that's kind of weird. What's going on? So it turns out that, from my sources, Devin Lemahue told his caucus recently that he and Robin Voss met with the governor. They talked about a tax deal. And in the words of my sources, Lemahue said the governor was surprisingly reasonable. They were holding off on doing a tax cut package until they says they continued these talks. I talked to Robin Voss on Thursday. He said, yes, we did meet. We are talking. I've watched the governor sign tax cuts he liked that we proposed to him and veto others. I could send a message or get a bill done. So I'm going to wait. We're going to keep talking, see if we can strike a deal. So a couple things about this. One, it's newsworthy the governor was in the same room as Robin Voss and Devin Lemahue March 26th.
Absolutely.
That doesn't happen, generally speaking. They confirmed they met in person in the governor's office in March. Two, Republicans have said, we're going to make sure we know how much the governor is going to sign before we do anything else. They can work out a deal on this that could also help other deals of the budget. And third, if Governor Evers is going to sign a tax cut Republicans like, when do you do that last? Is that 2021? What do you do in 2022? I don't know. It could predict things about what he might want to be doing in 2026. Maybe. Just maybe.
Just maybe. There's these little indicators, right? Maybe. All right. Let's just get to our last topic before we wrap up the show this week, is also recapping an audit that came out late Friday after we taped, which examined the University of Wisconsin. And what they found is that officials really don't track at all how much they spend on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, or whether the millions that they do spend on these initiatives actually pay off. Now, UW System Jay Rothman did warned that the audit, which was launched last year, did not reflect the current number of DEI jobs. He did note that they have made cuts, of course, since reaching that deal with GOP lawmakers to eliminate positions. There's now roughly about 64 positions, according to Rothman. Now, the auditor's work was challenging that there's no really universal definition of DEI. That's why he said it's very hard to discover what these positions and what they're doing. But this really just reemphasizes, of course, what we're hearing at the federal level with President Donald Trump seeking to root out DEI in K-12 schools and higher education as well.
Yeah, real quick, speaking of DEI, so Department of Public Instruction just today is telling the Trump administration, we're not backing down for your demand that we certify things. We are confident districts are following the law. This is important because the Trump folks have said, hey, if you're not following the law, we might come after your federal funding for schools. Watch how that plays out. Underly told us this morning that if there is any kind of effort to cut funding for K-12 in Wisconsin, they're looking at legal options to fight back against that possibility.
Another lawsuit, right?
Yeah.
All right. That will do it for this week's show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next time.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association. bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.